Hello and welcome to this presentation of the pageant for the inauguration of the new Lord Mayor on the 29th of October 1590. This time it's a fishmonger, the Right Honourable John Allott. The device of the pageant was written by Thomas Nelson. And unlike the last episode covering 1585, where we had a wealth of material from eyewitnesses and the text, here all we have is the text itself. So similarly, the recordings have been pulled together roughly as part of other recording sessions, so there is a certain discontinuity, not least that we didn't have to hand the child performers we'd planned for this show, so it's adults only, I'm afraid. However, I hope we give an idea of the sense of the text we have, and after the text there is a recording of our initial exploring session with Professor Tracy Hill, our resident city chronologer. Recorded with the 1585 and 1591 pageants, the full exploring session is available on our YouTube channel, links in the show description. So, it is the 29th of October, 1590. The new Lord Mayor is about to be officially sworn in. In the morning, the livery companies and other official-type people gather at the Guildhall in London. John Allott is led by this procession south to the Thames, down to Three Cranes, where he gets on a barge to be taken to Westminster to be sworn in. There might have been a water show on the waterside, but we have no evidence of one specifically. Music would be playing, cannons firing, and a small flotilla of boats leave with him on the journey. After being sworn in, he returns to the City of London, arriving somewhere near Paul's Stairs, west of where he got on the barges at Three Cranes, and heads up to the precincts of St. Paul's. From there, there is the long road of Cheapside, the widest street in the city, which he will process along to reach the Guildhall again. So effectively, a neat little circle. Somewhere along Cheapside, the following performances occurred. There are speeches delivered on figures of a mermaid and a unicorn, possibly on one or two separate stages, chariots, or what you wish to imagine. Then there's a pageant of various allegorical figures, fame, peace, plenty, again, possibly all mounted on one stage. And then there are real figures from the Peasants' Revolt, talking of the importance of the previous Lord Mayor Walworth to the close of that particular event in history. The fictional commentary that I have supplied is mostly inferred and probably inaccurate, and only presented here to try and explicate the text as it comes to us. As Cheapside has a number of convenient positions to present material, the little conduit, the cross, and the standard, I have split the pageant into effectively two parts along its length. The text speaks of the device, so it might all be at one station, but who can tell? So the introduction of the riding figures I place randomly just beyond St. Paul's at the Little Conduit on Cheapside, and the allegorical pageant at the Standard with the rebels beneath as part of it. Write angry letters if you disagree. But as the allegorical pageant starts with Fame, a figure that is actually physically part of the Standard, that seems reasonable. And now over to John, who might sound familiar, for the device of the pageant of 1590, for John Allott. Hello and welcome to this special live broadcast of the Lord Mayor's Show. The Right Honourable Lord Allott has returned from Westminster from his swearing-in and is approaching the first figures of the show at the Little Conduit on Cheapside. And what a sight it is! There are two figures. The first is riding on a merman, created by, yes, you heard that right, a merman, created by the craft of local artificers for the worshipful company of fishmongers. A very appropriate theme for fishmongers, eh? Our mermaid rider now speaks to the Lord Mayor.
Attend, my lord, and mark the tale I tell, whose form you see is monstrous, strange, and rare. Before, a man-like shape, behind, a fish's fell. This strange disguise doth make full many stare. And since they please to know why I come here, let them be still. The cause shall soon appear. Within this commonwealth, my lord, all those ye live in awe, do seek each day for to perform and keep the established law. Yea, such do keep your Sabbath day in reverence as they ought, and fish days too, as well as flesh, which many set at naught. Yet, if the same were well observed, flesh seldom would be dear, and fish abound at each man's board, more plenty in each year. Then England's store would be increased with butter, cheese, and beef, and thousands set to work for fish that now beg for relief. This shape so strange show they are strange and do digress from reason, that shun in eating fish and flesh to keep both time and season. Which fault reformed our commonwealth would flourish in such wise as never any did behold the like with mortal eyes.
And another figure approaches to speak to the Lord Mayor now, and this time he is riding a unicorn, and very impressive it is too.
O worthy city, now rejoice in Christ, for through his grace with peace he hath thee blessed. He sends thee still such godly magistrates as daily seeks to keep thee from unrest. Muse not, my lord, to see the sun doth shine on England's peace. Who sits in princely throne, it doth presage her sunshine still shall last, and make her foes afeared at every blast. So long as peace directed is by truth, and God's pure word receive it as it ought, so long the Lord will bless this little land, and make it flow with plenty in each place. Rule now, my lord, and keep this city well. Reform abuses crept into the same. So shall your fame eternized be for aye, and London still preserved from decay. And I, that do support the goldsmith's arms, which long in love to you have been united, will do my best to shadow you from harms, and find the means your loves may be requited.
This prologue, greeting the Lord Mayor John Allott, is a foretaste of the main device, as the procession now moves further down Cheapside to the Standard, which has the figure of fame atop. This device is written by Thomas Nelson, a member of the Stationers' Company. He is a bookseller and also a ballad maker, and you can hear that's where he gets his turn of phrase from. This is his first show, and it's going well so far. The crowd very enthusiastic. And the procession has reached the Standard a little over two-thirds of the way along Cheapside. And here we have an arrangement of figures on a stage with fame heralding the pageant. At the top is a representation of peace in England and supporting peace below. And on either side are wisdom and policy, with further figures below in this sort of wedding cake construction. So firstly, fame will sound to quieten the crowds.
The blessed peace which England doth possess, and so hath done this 32 years space, I, fame, am sent and charged to do no less, with trumpet's sound, but spread it in each place, that all may wish with hearts which do not feign, our royal peace in England still may reign.
And the peace of England now addresses the Lord Mayor.
I represent your peace and chiefest good, that every hour doth pray for your defence, I sit as shadow for that royal blood, whose life is pure, and still hath this pretense, that whilest she lives, even with her heart and might, she seeks in peace for to defend your right.
Wisdom supporteth still the public state. Wisdom foreseeth, ere it be too late.
Yea, policy prevents each traitorous fact, and doth perform full many a famous act. Both policy and wisdom will not cease, each night and day, for to preserve this peace.
Below our last two speakers there, wisdom and policy, we have God's truth coming up, as well as plenty, loyalty, and concord.
God's sacred truth, lo, here I represent, whom England's peace doth still maintain in place. I bring you comfort for your soul's content, which England's peace doth willingly embrace. And for her sake, by whom God's truth doth stand, the God of heaven doth bless this little land. Prudence and virtue shades our peace each day. Chaste is her life, and therewith rests content. In vain delights she shuns to run astray, her virtues are most rare and excellent. Long may she live, still to preserve this peace. Lord, still I pray, her health and joys increase.
This famous fleece doth so adorn our land, which daily doth with milk and honey flow, that fame doth make all nations understand, like peace and plenty never man did know. For wool and lead, for tin, corn, beer and beef, of Christian nations, England is the chief. Muse not to see this famous fleece doth stand upon a wool pack fixed at peace's feet. The reason is, as you may understand, worthy John Allott for his place most meet, is mayor of London and the staple too, and will perform in both what he should do.
Faithful and loyal are her subjects seen. Concord unites them still in loyal bands. Their tender hearts is linked to our queen, and concord craves no other at their hands. Thus loyalty and concord doth agree, that London still therein shall famous be.
Supporting wisdom and policy and the peace of England, and below them, on the next level down, we have ambition, commonwealth, science and labour.
Ambition, still puffed up with hate and pride, doth daily seek to work sweet England's fall. He never rests, but seeks each time and tide how England's peace might soon be brought in thrall, and commonwealth plunged into civil broils, that foreign foes might triumph in our spoils.
So, first hint of discord there from ambition.
Our Senate's grave and worthy magistrates shall still endeavour to maintain our peace by banishing ambition from our gates and seeking means this peace may never cease. Yea, virtue so by him advanced shall be that vice shall fly and not be seen in me.
Science still seeks those things we daily wish, and labour toils to bring us flesh and fish. Yea, science sure doth practice every day that labour might keep England from decay. Science and labour still preserves man's health, and are chief props of this, our common wealth.
So, yes, there, that was the main body of the pageant. England's peace at the top of the structure, upheld by wisdom and policy. Below, we have God's truth, plenty, loyalty and concord, and even further down, commonwealth, science and labour. Though we also heard from the dangers of ambition in the mix too. a gentle warning to the Lord Mayor that the state must be vigilant. Not everyone is there to support with loyalty and concord. Ambition can creep in too. The new Lord Mayor is Sir John Allott, who isn't a native-born Londoner, coming from Lincolnshire stock. Elected 10 years ago in 1580 as a Sheriff of London, he now joins his illustrious forebears as the Lord Mayor of the City of London. And talking of forebears, who are these figures appearing around the standard now? Joining all the allegorical figures, we have some figures from history. These are figures from the Peasants' Revolt. Yes, I see first coming up King Richard II, and he's threatened by the traitorous rebel Jack Straw and his men, who will be vanquished by the brave Lord Mayor, William Woolworth, a predecessor in the Fishmongers' Company to our current Lord Mayor.
Help Woolworth now to daunt this rebel's pride. Ask what thou wilt, thou shalt not be denied.
Jack Straw, the rebel I present. Wat Tyler was my aid. Hob Carter and Tom Miller too, we all were not afraid. For to deprive our sovereign king, Richard II named, yet for our bad ambitious minds by Woolworth we were tamed. He being Mayor of London then, soon danted all our pride. He slew me first, the rest soon fled, and then like traitors died.
I represent Sir William Woolworth's place, a fishmonger and Mayor of London twice. I slew Jack Straw, who sought my king's disgrace, and for my act reaped honours of great price. First knight was I of London, you may read, and since each mayor gains knighthood by my deed. Yea, for that deed to London I did gain, this dagger here in arms given as you see. I won my company this crest which doth remain, this to myself and my posterity. Thus did the king with honours me adore, and fame herself still laudeth me therefore.
And Sir William Woolworth is pointing now to the honours wherewith the king did endue him, which are placed near about him in the pageant. So pointing there at the various honours, the first honour is the dagger given in the shield to the City of London. The second is the crest given to the company. Namely, two arms bearing up a crown. And the third is to the said Woolworth and his posterity forever. Two arms bearing up a millstone. Showing thereby that the said Sir William Woolworth performed a matter so impossible as it is for a man to hold up a millstone between both his arms. And yes, if you want to know more about the tale of rebellious Jack Straw against King Richard II and his defeat by the valiant Lord Mayor Woolworth, you can always go and see the stage play which is out now of the life and death of Jack Straw. All of this action is there on the London stage. Oh, and there is a final motto being presented in this tableau. It is one of time. So, the personification of time.
Time serves for all things. Time runneth fast. We crave your patience, for the time is past.
The time is past. Indeed, appropriate words with which to close this Lord Mayor's Show of 1590. With that, the Lord Mayor, John Allott and his company, will retire to the Guildhall for the traditional feast. And hopefully Sir John will enjoy the feast. He looks a little peaky to me. And so that ends this live broadcast on this day of the 29th of October, 1590. This is John signing off, and back to the studio. In the 1590 Lord Mayor Show, you heard the voices of Karim Cronfley, Gillian Horgan, Seb Ranson, Liza Graham, David Ault, Gear Madland, Pamela Flanagan, and Trumpet by Matt Byam. It was hosted and produced by myself, Robert Crichton. And now, over to our initial exploring session for more expert opinion about how this show was structured, with regular city chronologer Professor Tracy Hill, Gregory Musson, Alex Scott Fairley, and Liza Graham. And of course, me. Okay, we're going to jump forward in time. 5 years. We don't, unfortunately, have the pageants in between. We have all we have. I don't think we have any major additional sources to go with this one. This is 1590, and it's not by Peel. Not by Peel this time. But we do have some more magical creatures to be ridden on, which I'm sure you will all enjoy. So this is the device of the pageant set forth by the worshipful company of the fishmongers for the Right Honourable John Allott. Allott, do we know anything about him?
Not a lot.
Oh, thank you very much, Liza. Established Lord Mayor of London and the Mayor of the Staple for this present year of our Lord, 1590. This is by Thomas Nelson. I just see a T, and suddenly...
Yeah. It's a bit of a mystery, really. Every now and again, they throw these sort of random individuals and think, who the hell's that? Like John Squire in 1620. We don't know much about him. He was a printer, I think. Used a couple of other texts, but I don't know why he got the job. He must have known someone.
Okay, let's go into this text. So once again, we've reversed ourselves back to the vicinity of St. Paul's. We're on Cheapside. We're heading towards the Guildhall. This speech is to be spoken by him that rideth on the merman. Greg, you look like a merman rider.
Attend, my lord, and mark the tale I tell, whose form you see is monstrous, strange, and rare. Before a man-like shape behind a fish's fell, this strange disguise doth make full many stare. And since they please to know why I come here, let them be still, the cause shall soon appear. Within this commonwealth, my lord, all those ye live in awe do seek each day for to perform and keep the established law. Yea, such do keep ye Sabbath day in reverence as they ought, and fish days too, as well as flesh, which many set at naught. Yet if the same were well observed, flesh seldom would be dear, and fish abound at each man's board more plenty in each year. Then England's store would be increased with butter, cheese, and beef, and thousands set to work for fish that now beg for relief. This shape so strange, show they are strange, and do digress from reason, that shun in eating fish and flesh to keep both time and season, which fault reformed, our commonwealth would flourish in such wise as never any did behold the like with mortal eyes.
And now the speech spoken by him that rideth on the unicorn. Liza, you look like a unicorn rider.
Thank you, Rob. That's probably the nicest thing anyone's ever. Oh, worthy city, now rejoice in Christ, for through his grace with peace he hath thee blessed. He sends thee still such godly magistrates as daily seeks to keep thee from unrest. Muse not, my lord, to see the sun doth shine on England's peace who sits in princely throne. It doth presage her sunshine still shall last and make her foes afeard at every blast. So long as peace directed is by truth and God's pure word receive it as it ought, so long the Lord will bless this little land and make it flow with plenty in each place. Rule now, my lord, and keep this city well. Reform abuses crept into the same. So shall your fame eternized be for aye, and London still preserved from decay. And I that do support the goldsmith's arms, which long in love to you have been united, will do my best to shadow you from harms, and find the means your loves may be requited.
And before we move on to the shorter elements, I mean, this feels very much like the in the pageant 5 years ago, that we have two people doing the opening sort of gambit rather than one. I don't know if that's a fair way of putting it, but they feel like the adults throat clearing before we get to the children. I don't know if that's fair. I quite like this. It's interesting that there's more of a you've got a job to do quality to this than the last one. Yeah. It does sound like you've got to make sure that good things happen. It's not just a free ride. The merman's speech I found quite bizarre. I quite like the unicorn's one, but I'm not sure what was going on with the merman. Thoughts from the room. Thoughts from the room.
Paid for by the fish marketing board.
Yeah. He was a member of the Fishmongers Guild.
Yeah.
Apparently. So.
Liza.
I wonder if it was the figure of a merman and the actor was riding on it, or if it were just, say, for example, a fish tail that you could stand in and you could be seen down to the waist, and you could say, the opening few lines do sort of seem to indicate that the actor is talking about himself being a merman. Mark the tale I tell, whose form you see is monstrous, strange, and rare. So he might be talking about himself as a merman, rather than, hey, this is my awesome merman friend whom I'm riding on.
Other thoughts?
It does read like a bit of propaganda about the fishing guild, doesn't it? I'm just rereading it again, but kind of... Is it saying that you'd like, are they hanging this all on the tenuous peg of keeping the Sabbath and not eating meat and eating fish, and this would do for the general good because then there'd be more things that come out of cows? And that's so bizarre.
what you don't get from Peel's shows is the sense of the kind of corporate civic interests, and you get that in all the others.
Right.
Peel is kind of at a remove, strangely, from all that. As you'll see for the next one, he gets very excited about the Queen. But they were expected to mention the company extensively. You know, they were, you know, after all, in the spotlight, and there's a lot of money at stake. So, yeah,
that's amazing. It's like a party political broadcast.
It's from the fish marketing board. Yes.
It's not as subtle as some of them are.
I mean, if they were written like that these days, I'd actually listen to them.
You know, in the interval of the football, there's like 5 minutes of iambic pentameter telling you to eat more fish. I think now the goldsmiths seem to have paid for the unicorn, and they also seem to have. I would imagine that the pageant wagon seems to include a sun, and the sun might be gilded with like gold leaf. Because they seem to make a lot of the sun in that one quatrain.
Hmm. Yeah, the goldsmiths and the fishmongers were kind of, you know, celebrated for their amity. You get a fishmonger's show, the one that's illustrated 1616. Mande starts that one by saying, you know, how lot far back the friendship goes and all this kind of malarkey. So yeah, that's, again, it would have really been expected.
Wear gold, eat fish.
Yeah.
And what's the symbolism of the unicorn there? Because weirdly, the unicorn is traditionally associated with the moon, is it not? And they're kind of putting up the golden sun. So to me, that's an antithetical. I mean, obviously, these days it's associated with Scotland, which I guess long postdates this. But it's
Are a separate kingdom at this point.
Yeah.
but I think the unicorn might be associated with purity at this point.
Farms has got unicorns on it.
Ah, yes. And ground unicorn horn was meant to prevent people poisoning your drink. Because the unicorn was so pure, you see. As you say, it probably is just the goldsmith's arms, and I'm sticking with my idea of the sun as a massive gilded thing with that looks incredibly shiny and impressive.
Yeah, see no reason why not. Any additional thoughts before we go into what we shall call the children's section of the entertainment? Okay, similar fashion to last time, we'll go around the room. We'll start with Greg this time. If you could be Fame, sounding a trumpet, and saith...
The blessed peace which England doth possess, and so hath done this 32 years space. I, Fame, am sent and charged to do no less, with trumpet sound, but spread it in each place, that all may wish with hearts which do not feign, our royal peace in England may still reign.
And Liza, peace of England, please.
I represent your peace, and chiefest good, that every hour doth pray for your defence. I sit as shadow for that royal blood whose life is pure and still hath this pretence, that whilst she lives even with her heart and might, she seeks in peace for to defend your right.
And Alex, wisdom on one side supporting the state saith.
Wisdom supporteth still the public state. Wisdom foreseeth ere it be too late.
Policy on the other side supporting the state saith, Tracy.
Yea, policy prevents each traitorous fact, and doth perform full many a famous act. Both policy and wisdom will not cease each night and day for to preserve this peace.
And Greg, God's truth, sir.
God's sacred truth, lo, here I represent, whom England's peace doth still maintain in place. I bring you comfort for your soul's content, which England's peace doth willingly embrace. And for her sake, by whom God's truth doth stand, the God of heaven doth bless this little land. Prudence and virtue shades our peace each day. Chaste is her life, and therewith rests content. In vain delight she shuns to run astray. Her virtues are most rare and excellent. Long may she live still to preserve this peace. Lord, still I pray her health and joys increase.
Liza, you are plenty.
This famous fleece doth so adorn our land, which daily doth with milk and honey flow, that Fame doth make all nations understand, like peace and plenty never man did know. For wool and lead, for tin, corn, beer, and beef, of Christian nations England is the chief. Muse not to see this famous fleece doth stand upon a wool pack fixed at peace's feet. The reason is, as you may understand, worthy John Allott, for his place most meet, is mayor of London and the staple too, and will perform in both what he should do.
And Alex, you get to be loyalty and concord.
Faithful and loyal are her subjects seen. Concord unites them still in loyal bands. Their tender hearts is linked to our queen, and concord craves no other at their hands. Thus loyalty and concord doth agree, that London still therein shall famous be.
Tracy, ambition.
Or, ambition still puffed up with hate and pride doth daily seek to work sweet in England's fall. He never rests, but seeks each time and tide how England's peace might soon be brought in thrall, and Commonwealth plunged into civil broils, that foreign foes might triumph in our spoils.
Greg, the Commonwealth.
Our Senate's grave and worthy magistrate shall endeavour to maintain our peace by banishing ambition from our gates and seeking means this peace may never cease. Yea, virtue so by him advanced shall be that vice shall fly and not be seen in me.
And Liza, you get to be two people as well. You get to be science and labour.
Science still seeks those things we daily wish, and labour toils to bring us flesh and fish. Yea, science sure doth practice every day, that labour might keep England from decay. Science and labour still preserves man's health, and are chief props of this our commonwealth.
And now we're dipping into history now, as Richard II pops in.
Help Walworth now to dent this rebel's pride. Ask what thou wilt, thou shalt not be denied.
And Tracy gets to be Jack Straw.
Jack Straw, the rebel I present. Wat Tyler was my aide. Hob Carter and Tom Miller too. We all were not afraid, but to deprive our sovereign king, Richard II named. Yet for our bad ambitious minds by Walworth we were tamed. He being Lord Mayor of London then, soon dented all our pride. He slew me first, the rest soon fled, and then like traitors died, I think that is.
Right, should be died, yes. Walworth, it might not be, there's an interesting question about saying the Commonwealth, but you're clearly Walworth. So, Greggs, William Walworth, please.
I now present Sir William Walworth's place, a fishmonger and mayor of London twice. I slew Jack Straw, who sought my king's disgrace, and for my acts reaped honours of great price. First knight was I of London, you may read, and since each mayor gains knighthood by my deed. Yea, for that deed to London I did gain, this dagger here in arms given as you see. I won my company, this crest which doth remain, this to myself and my posterity. Thus did the king with honours me adore, and fame herself still laudeth me therefore.
And the final notes, it is to be understood that Sir William Walworth pointeth to the honours wherewith the king did endue him, which were placed near about him in the pageant. The first was the dagger given in the shield to the City of London. The second was the crest given to the company, namely two arms bearing up a crown. And the third was to the said Walworth and his posterity forever, two arms bearing up a millstone, showing thereby that the said Sir William Walworth performed a matter so impossible as it is for a man to hold up a millstone between his arms. Final text, Liza, time.
Time serves for all things. Time runneth fast. We crave your patience, for the time is past.
And that's all we have. And there's really interesting similarities and differences between what we had before and then here. You know, all the fame piece. I think peace in England is quite a thing you're quite keen on in the 1590. Worrying about peace is about. And then we get to the sort of historical recreation moment, and going back to quite a famous chap, which we'll come to in a moment. But it's doing interesting things. And considering we were doing those sort of worthy things when we were looking at Coventry the other day, and that end bit with the king and the rebels feels sort of like in line with that. But also, yeah, it's a really interesting disjointed quality between all the fame and the science and labour stuff, and then that final bit with Richard II. Thoughts?
Yeah, it did seem more like this sort of. The earlier ones sort of seem very classical, everything about it, like the nymphs and the personification of the River Thames and what have you. It was sort of like we're translating the whole new Troy, like linking it to Greece, which this seems to harp more on Christian nations, like this is a Christian schema of morality. It's really weird that ambition kind of appears, like again, if I'm reading this right, like a sort of pantomime villain going, ha ha ha, I'm going to bring England down. And then suddenly it takes this sort of left turn into historical figures. It's sort of like everything in the kitchen sink's been thrown at this version.
It's also slightly, I hate to say cruder, but you know, it's just they all come on and say, I represent, in a way that feels more old-fashioned than what Peel was doing.
Yeah, I also wondered, like, the wisdom thing, because it's only two lines, just in my head was a really small child who's been taught to say these two lines and they're holding up the whole public stage. It was the youngest orphan in Annie in my head.
Well, I'm thinking, because wisdom gets two lines and then policy gets four, but they're working together. I wonder if wisdom says two, policy says two, and then they both say the final two.
Oh, yeah.
I just wonder about that. I don't know.
Yes, which loyalty and concord would then repeat, actually, if that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you're absolutely right, because the latter you've got thus loyalty and concord doth agree, and then you've got both policy and wisdom will not cease. So yeah, that's really, I've never noticed that before. Well done, thank you.
Yeah, or they do it both in unison or not. I mean, it's you know, or they decided in rehearsal.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, actually, then science and labour do it later as well, don't they? There's three sets of little pairs. Science talks to labour, and then
one, two, third. So it's every third time is a double act.
Clever, isn't it?
Mm.
What Tyler Woolworth's saying is kind of standard trope, really. What Woolworth is very famous, fishmonger Lord Mayor. I put up a picture of a virtually contemporary medieval picture of the Woolworth killing Wat Tyler. You can see on the left hand side of the image. So he comes up, he features in all the fishmonger's pageantry.
It's interesting as well that Jack Straw, I mean, because we've done for the podcast a full cast audio adaptation of the life and death of Jack Straw, so this comes round well to us. But in that, you explicitly have all the characters: Jack Straw, Wat Tyler, Hobcart, and Tom Miller too, with a play that's happening at around about the same time.
Mm.
So it feels like they're in conversation. In that sense, which way round, or whether it's a circular loop, I don't know. But you know, that depiction of all of that character, all of the characters, rather than just one or two, seems intended, you know, or seems, you know, logical.
I love the little it looks like a song lyric, the time bit at the end, and what I want to do is lift it out of here and put it as the finale song when we do Friar Bacon and Friar Bungay.
Yeah, I was thinking that. time was. I think that's how it goes, isn't it? I can't remember. But yeah, messaging coming from the big giant head. well, that would throw in two, you know, theatrical crossovers into one text, I find interesting. So any other thoughts? We've only got one more to do. We've got the following years. We're back to Peel. But any more on Nelson, as it were? Oh. I think you're right. It picks up on the mercantile element of things much more. It's much more ingratiating to the city. Rather than the queen, the first one was very queeny, and in a sense slightly simpler, but then maybe he was writing to the performers he was going to get as well. Maybe there was a reason for that. I like all of that. I like all of that. Any more? No.
I think we're in a different political environment in 1590 versus 1584 as well. I think that's 85 rather. I think, you know, things are getting a bit more fraught. We're on the edge of a period of great dearth. There is a reference there to not enough fleet. Obviously, Elizabeth's getting older, there's no heir. So, yeah, it's getting a bit sticky, the 90s, I think. Obviously, we're back into the 80s again with the next year one, but I think there are certainly moments there where you're thinking, okay, so, you know, Lord Mayor is not being expected to have an easy time of it.
And many thanks to Gregory Musson, Alex Scott Fairley, Liza Graham, and Professor Tracy Hill for their reading and discussion of those texts. All our exploring sessions on civic pageantry and royal entries is available on our YouTube channel, and other Lord Mayor's Shows stuff can be found on the podcast and on our website. Links in the show description. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not throw us a coffee on ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare? Or maybe you'd like to support us longer term by becoming a patron. Lots of early access releases as well as exclusive content depending on which tier you're on. Certainly you get early access to all our exploring sessions from the lowest tier. Things get better the further up you go. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. Links in the show description.